Dress, the History of Fashion is a production of iHeartRadio. Over 7 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed, the History of Fashion, a podcast that explores the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, April Callahan
and Cassidy Zachary. COVID has really affected so many billions of individuals, including the many people who depend on annual markets, festivals, and fairs for their livelihood. And as we know, so many of these events have been canceled or postponed in person, that is.
Yes, and thanks to the power of technology, many of these events are now turning to digital platforms, and that also includes the Southwestern Association for the Indian Arts annual Santa Fe Indian Market, which celebrates its 99th anniversary this year. And this is amazing. Every year, over 100,000 people converge every August in Santa Fe for the market, which features hundreds of indigenous artists from across the United States.
And one of the celebrated features of this market is the annual fashion show, which is this incredible showcase of indigenous talent and innovation. As you know, April, and I think I talked about it on the show, I attended for the first time last year, and this is where I was introduced to the work of Karina Emmerich and invited her to be a guest on Dress. So you can head back and check out that episode if you haven't listened to it already, Dress listeners. But Karina this year is one of 7 designers participating in the online event, which is actually already in action because starting this past Monday, there have been daily designer spotlights and they'll continue daily until this Sunday, which is the main event. And that is this August 16th at 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time or 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
To learn more about the event, its history, and these incredible designers, we are so pleased to welcome the show's producer, Amber Dawn Bearrobe, to the show.
Amber Dawn, welcome to Dressed. It's such a pleasure to have you here with us today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Yes, so the Haute Couture Fashion Show is one of the most highly anticipated events of the annual Santa Fe Indian Market, which is celebrating its 99th anniversary this year. Can you tell us a little bit about the fashion show and maybe its history?
Well, I should clarify, it's not really an actual haute couture fashion show. That title somehow just made its way in and stuck. The fashion show includes ready-to-wear as well as all handmade collections. So it's not a true official meaning of a haute couture fashion show. But this fashion show did quickly grow. It's already outgrown myself. And just, it started with me putting it together with like gum and shoelaces, and we didn't realize the attention the fashion show would get. So the very first year, it was 4 designers, and this was 2014. So this is actually, this year, 2020 is the 7th year. But in 2014, it was 4 designers, and it was Orlando Degay, Bethany Yellowtail, Jamie Okuma, and Shosho Asquaro. And there was a handful of models, and we overtook the Swaya building. There was hair and makeup and clothing thrown everywhere, all over the entire building. And we had to actually bring the models, because the first fashion show that I did for Swaya was in Cathedral Park, which was outside. So we had to bring the models in a U-Haul truck to the actual location. I wish I had a picture of that, but I don't. So it was, you know, there wasn't really any support. Swaya, they were kind of like, okay, go do your thing. But the turnout that we got and the feedback we got was amazing and positive, and it was so exciting and exhilarating and something really different that in terms of Swaya programming. And so every year since then is just grown in leaps and bounds, and we already have outgrown the convention center, which is the largest venue, at least in the downtown plaza, to hold the fashion show. But so that's how it started. Now there's a lot of support, and the new director, Kim Pion, who's she just started, and she's the first Native Indigenous woman to be the director of Swaya, I might add. But she's very supportive, and the fashion programming has become really quintessential to all of Swaya Indian Market.
Yeah. And I attended for my first time last year. And it was, I mean, the energy in that room was just so incredible. It's kind of this exciting experience, right? You start with this wonderful performance, this dance artist there, and then, you know, designer after designer sharing these incredible creations. So I want to know a little bit about you, because you're a curator and an art historian by training. Can you tell us a little bit about your work and how you translated your experiences and your skills into producing a fashion show?
When I first moved to Santa Fe in 2012, Patsy Phillips, the director of the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, I was doing contract work, and she asked me if I would put together this fashion show. And so I really saw this as an exciting new extension of my curatorial experience. Definitely much different, but you know, I'm used to working with artists, used to programming, used to putting on events and hosting events. This is much more fast-paced, much more high energy, as you mentioned. But that was really the very first time I produced a fashion show, was for the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts in 2013. Then I produced one for them again in collaboration with the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival in 2013. And then, so the very first one was in 2014. It was just a really easy transition, and I really appreciated it. And it's another way to express myself and to, you know, I look at it as curating, bringing Indigenous designers together. But it's always been an important part of the fashion programming I produce is to include artists who are not necessarily known as fashion designers, but dabble in textiles or use textiles and fashion in their artistic career. So I try to have a performative element to my fashion shows as well. So I'm kind of merging this, my artistic art historical career with this fashion direction I've now taken.
And I have to know, because you do come from an art background, do you then think that fashion is an art? Because this is such a hotly debated question in the curatorial world, in the art world, in the fashion world.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, when you go to the majority of fashion shows, or when you see the majority of fashion shows, they are performances. I wouldn't say all fashion is art, but fashion can absolutely be art, no question about it, especially when I look at contemporary Indigenous artists. If you look at Wendy Redstar, for example, she's been incorporating fashion as part of her artistic process, as well as Skawanati, who is in this year's virtual fashion show. She's been using this digital futuristic world. She's been working in this for over 10 years now. 10 plus years, and she's been creating these fashions for her avatars and for herself. And this year she's bringing these virtual fashion collections she's been doing into real time, which you'll see in this year's fashion show. So Indigenous artists have really been walking that line of fashion and art for a long time now. And when you look at Indigenous art and culture, the history, Indigenous textiles and fashion is absolutely such a fundamental part of Native art and culture.
Yeah, and I actually saw an interview with you, and it might be on the SWAIA website, but where you talk about the like textile and dressmaking and fashion traditions of Indigenous cultures and how they go back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship between cultural traditions versus innovation and modernity that you really bring to the fashion shows?
Yes, great question, but a very large question, because something I want to really emphasize is Indigenous cultures are so diverse. I mean, when I'm teaching Native art history, we're looking at America and Canada, for one thing, which are two different countries. Then you're looking at these cultural regions, for example, the cultural region of the West. That includes the Great Plains, California, the Great Basin, and what am I missing here? I'm missing... But anyway, the point is that we are, when you're looking at one region, the West in itself covers the great rolling plains to the California, where you have sandy beaches and the ocean. And most people don't think of, when you think of the ocean and sandy beaches, you don't think of Indigenous people. So what I'm trying to really emphasize is the diversity of Indigenous art and culture and design is also, it's so diverse, but it's also based on the environment and reflects the environment of where people live. For example, when you look at northern clothing up north, the history of northern clothing in the harsh Arctic climate, the innovative technology of using walrus esophagus and intestines to make rain watertight proof material is life-saving, and but also is beautiful. The aesthetics is beautiful to be in honor of animals that they were hunting, but to also call the animals to them for a successful hunt. So when you're talking about innovation is absolutely historically ingrained in Indigenous fashion and textiles. And also Indigenous arts and culture have always been changing as a living and breathing entity, because there were vast trade network systems in North America way before there was any contact with Europeans and Spanish people. So this idea of tradition versus non-tradition versus authentic and non-authentic and pre-contact and contact and trade, you know, it really, that is a Eurocentric lens and a kind of an anthropological lens to put Native art and culture into these neat little compartments. That doesn't exist. And so when you look at Indigenous designers, Indigenous fashion, maybe it was called something different historically, but Indigenous designers have been using innovative ways to make clothing and textiles for millions of years. There's many different examples. Even if you look at powwow culture and powwow outfits, even in my lifetime, how they've changed from now when you go to powwows, you just see this bright, fancy, neon, flashy outfits. Regalia, which I didn't see when I was younger. So Indigenous, even what is considered, quote, Indigenous traditional dress or regalia, that is always moving and changing with innovative techniques and materials and design as well.
That's a really good segue into the fashion show, because that diversity, that innovation is on that runway every year. You have designers that coming in from all over the country, from Canada, and they're all doing these incredibly different and unique designs that really, really show that and celebrate that. And this year, the show, like the market, is entirely virtual. Can you tell us about a little bit about this year's show and your decision to highlight the Dene designer Orlando Dugay?
Yes, the plan to go virtual, of course, was enforced because of COVID. The whole world was forced to change. But it was kind of in limbo because I didn't know what was going to be happening with Swaya this year due to we had no director for a while. We had two intern directors who were fantastic. But once a new director was hired, I had no idea which direction Swaya was going to go. Was it going to be in person? So I was really trying to see what direction that Kim would take Swaya. She very quickly made it clear she wanted to have a virtual platform for market. And she hit the ground running and has been working 24/7 to make this virtual market successful. Just to see Kim move into this new territory, which is also new for her in terms of having a virtual market, but also she's in a new environment as a new director of Swaya. She has just hit the ground running and she is doing amazing. So I was brought in and it was like, yep, we're going to have a virtual market. So yes, let's have a virtual fashion show. And I always had in my mind, even when I was in limbo, and so I was in limbo and we didn't have a director, I wanted to work with someone local, and Orlando Dugay is local. Due to logistic reasons and social distancing, I also wanted to work with Kayla, who is directing and producing and filming these actual fashion clips that we're making. So she's a one-woman film production crew. And then you have Orlando Dugay. And his designs lend so great for this really intricate, what I call a slow fashion show that's going to be happening. Because he does not call himself a haute couture at all. He does not like that word or that term. But he does do everything by hand. And he doesn't even use a sewing machine for the hemming, from my understanding. But all the beading and I don't even know all the technical terms for what he does, but it's absolutely exquisite technical details. And so much time goes into one dress. Everything is made to order. It's one of a kind originals. There is no ready to wear, at least at this point in time in his collection. So I just thought his work would really lend well to this virtual platform, because Kayla has been filming him behind the scenes for a couple of months now, making his new 2020 new capsule collection. So it's kind of complicated because there's a lot of moving parts to this fashion event. So this Sunday, he is going to be the debut of his 2020 new capsule collection in a very private, intimate fashion show. And it's 9 new looks. There's a handful of guests. And this is in a private residence that lends perfectly for this intimate fashion show. The living room opens up into a big portel, so there's lots of air. It's not enclosed. And then the portel overlooks Santa Fe, a beautiful view of Santa Fe. So the guests that are going to be there are going to be part of the film. So this is the final part of this little fashion film that we're doing, about 10 minutes. And so when I say a slow fashion show, all the guests will be seated, social distancely, 6 feet apart. And there's going to be only 4 models who, of course, are going to have to do quick changes because there's 9 looks. So there will be at least 1 or 2 models on the floor at one time and posing in ways where guests will be able to really look at the intricacy and work into his designs, where you don't get that experience when it's on a fast runway. So that's why I thought this would be a perfect artist to have the slow show. So that's going to be filmed this Sunday. So that's going to be the final part for this fashion film. And then what's happening on Sunday, August 16th, is we're going to be having, this is what's going to be on the virtual market platform, is this fashion film of debuting Orlando de Guy's new collection, and followed by a live streamed Q&A with Orlando and myself. I'm just hosting Orlando, but it's with Q&A with Orlando de Guy. And so certain members will be able to ask Orlando questions live and he will answer them. So that's the virtual component. And so I also wanted to state that for the week of market, I wanted this to be an event. I wanted this to be like a special event for the week of what would have been the in-person market. So August 10th to 15th, we're debuting 6 new fashion film teasers of designers and artists from Canada and the United States who have been at their own home making their own little, their own video shorts that will be debuting. One new fashion designer will be debuting every day from the 10th to the 15th. And then on the 16th, it's showing the series of the 6 new designers, followed by the debut of Orlando de Guy's fashion film short, followed by the live stream Q&A. So there's a lot of moving parts to this, but I wanted this to be an event. This is the first time we're doing this. And I see this growing to something. I see this as being, this is the first time, and this is the launch of something that's going to be much bigger, because I really want this to have a global reach. The director wants Swaya, a virtual Swaya, to have a global reach as well. And she's supportive of, we really want to make this fashion component department of Swaya to grow in ways that we never thought possible before. And the designers, the 6 designers that are going to be debuting new works as well and new collections, include Skawanati, who is a Mohawk from Canada. And I'm so excited for her little, she actually does a virtual fashion show in which she's created her avatars. She's created the fashion of her avatars. And then we are going to see her actual avatar fashion in real time, in real life. Because that's what she's working on now, is making avatar fashion into real time fashion. She creates her own, prints her own, creates her own fabrics. So it's so exciting. So that's one example. And then we also have Karina Emmerich, who is, of course, she was on Project Runway, and she's really active in the Indigenous movements and communities. You'll see a part of her mask making that she's also working on since this pandemic. We also have Sage Paul, who's going to be who's participating in this year's fashion, virtual fashion, and she's Canadian, and she is the director of, and I believe it's the director of Toronto Indigenous Fashion Week. So I'm really excited to have her. Also, Catherine Blackburn. I love Catherine Blackburn.
Now, oh, her stuff's so cool.
Yeah. So she's someone who really started off as an artist, and she kind of just, you know, made her way into fashion because the demand of her work and the innovation of her work and the reference to Native fashion, to fashion, to textile. So she's creating, I've already booked her for the 100th year SWAYA anniversary show. But her work is, you know, I showed her work New Age Warriors last year, which you saw. And that was probably the last time most of that work, most of those creations will be on the runway, because they have since been purchased by museums.
Yeah.
And so once works get into museums, it's really hard to get them out and then on people due to contracts and money and policies and procedures. Then we have Delina White, who's going to be also showing of I Am Anishinaabe. She's always such an amazing, joyful person to work with. But I love her designs that also incorporate many different body sizes, many different body sizes and gender. And then we have Patricia Michaels, of course, our local Santa Fe, New Mexican sweetheart. She's created a little film short for this as well. So it's a fabulous lineup. One new designer shot every day, and then we can see it all again on the 16th, followed by Orlando.
And of course, we'll provide a link in our show notes so everyone can get to that website to check it out this Sunday. A couple more questions before you go, because the importance of this annual fashion show really extends well beyond its aesthetics. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the cultural and social significance of Indigenous fashion design. That might be a big question too, but...
Yeah, that is a big question. Let me just start with saying, I mean, Indigenous fashion is not something new. People are now just paying attention to it on a larger scale. I think the significance, that significance still needs to take place, I'd say, on a larger, grander scale, to the point of where there's more collaborations or you see more Indigenous designers on major platforms. SWAYA and Herd Markets, they have been quintessential platforms for Indigenous designers who didn't have platforms for the past 20 years. There's a whole history of Indigenous fashion in the Southwest that is really unique to this region. It has a rich history. But designers look to themselves, to their cultures or to their Indigenous cultures, to their land, to their environment. And maybe not all, I can't speak for all Native designers, but Indigenous designers have that wealth and resource of their own cultures to look at, to explore. While American and European designers oftentimes look to other global cultures to get influence for their collections. So I think that's something that's really significant and unique to Indigenous designers and artists. But it also leads to, and I don't even want to go down the rabbit hole of appropriation, because we all know that story. Victoria's Secret, so appropriation is another huge vortex that is being addressed. I know Jessica Metcalf and Adrienne Keane really went after Paul Frank, but something good came out of that. Paul Frank saw it, heard the complaints, and turned it around into actual collaborations with Indigenous artists. So the social significance, I mean, I could go all over the board with that, but I think what I'd like to focus on is, how do you just appropriate or how do you appreciate? Appropriating is when you pick and choose from different cultures around the world without actually understanding what you're picking and choosing, and without understanding that Indigenous culture, without actually going and talking to communities or talking to artists and designers, being like, hey, what does this mean? Am I doing something that's completely offensive, or is this, you know, I want some more information on this. And as collaborations, so it can be a good thing looking at Indigenous cultures and doing collaborations, but it needs to be done in a way that is actually respectful. Mm-hmm. I want to say there's much more awareness in Canada in terms of Indigenous rights and arts and culture and peoples. I don't want to make grand sweeping statements, but many people don't even know that America and Canada was founded on the genocide of Native North American people.
Right.
So when you talk about appropriation versus appreciation, Indigenous cultures are very unique when it comes to when culture is lifted and appropriated, because there really is no basic understanding that Indigenous people are the foundation of what we call America and Canada. So I could go on and on about that, but and I want to give one example. I could give a few examples, but one example is that I thought is when you, it's not all bad. And if appropriation has happened in the past, we can't take it away, but we can learn from that, learn from each other and move forward. For example, was it Jean-Paul Gaultier? He made this wedding bonnet, and a museum in Montreal, Canada wanted to have this part of an exhibition. But, you know, in Canada, it's like, no, you're not going to get away with that without a backlash from Indigenous communities. So I think this was in 2017. The museum reached out to Kent Monkman, who is a really well-known Native contemporary artist, internationally acclaimed contemporary artist. And they asked Kent Monkman, they're like, what should we do about this? So Kent Monkman, who has an alter ego of Miss Chief Eagle Testicle, he said, well, I think Jean-Paul Gaultier made this wedding dress to marry Miss Chief Eagle Testicle. So what happened was this became a performance. Jean-Paul Gaultier came to the museum and married Miss Chief Eagle Testicle.
Oh, wow.
Under these lights in the shape of a teepee. And it became this whole performance, and it became a celebration, and it became a dialogue. And so appropriation has happened in the past. It's going to happen. It's not going to stop anytime soon, but it's a matter of using kind of appropriation collaborations as platforms to move forward and not be stuck in this, you're evil, you're bad, and stop doing this, but to move forward with this conversation. So
that's really beautiful. And I'm going to look that up immediately because I had not read about that. And that leads right into my last question, which was, how do our listeners, and you've kind of answered this partially, but how do our listeners appreciate and participate in Indigenous design fashions without appropriating the culture? Because there's definitely a right and a wrong way to do it.
Well, it is going to, is buying from the artists, is exactly. Buying from Native owned companies and organizations, and they exist. There's a lot of them. There's been a whole birth of them since 2012. And if you don't know, go to Jessica Metcalf's Beyond Buckskin Boutique. She really was a leader in, because people were always asking her this question, how can I support Native artists and not appropriate? So she put together this platform of Beyond Buckskin Boutique, where people can come and buy and explore Native art and jewelry and fashion, all made by Indigenous people. But that's also Swaya too. Now Swaya has a virtual platform to do that. But there's many other Indigenous owned companies in Canada and the United States, even makeup companies, Cheekbone up in Canada. And I'm actually this year, I wanted to mention a She Beauty Company who was started, founded by a Seiki, who's a Navajo woman. A She high-end beauty company is partnering with Orlando Degay and with this fashion show. And, but this is a fully owned Indigenous woman company, and they luxury beauty line, Yellowtail, you know, so there's many different venues you can go. Like, don't go to Amazon thinking you're going to buy original Indigenous made anything.
Right. So it's really about educating yourself and being conscious, right, about what you're buying. And there's all these resources out there for you to help you do it. So we'll definitely post links in the show notes to many of these wonderful designers that you've mentioned. Thank you so much for being here today, Amber Dawn. This was truly a pleasure. And we're all looking forward to this Sunday's event.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Amber Dawn. This show has such an incredible roster of designers, and of course, we will provide links to all of the designers' work, as well as to the show, which airs again this Sunday, August 16th at 2 p.m. Mountain Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And we'll also post a link to an article between the marriage between Mr. Chief Eagle Testicle, aka Kent Monkman, and Jean-Paul Gaultier, which I cannot believe that we have not talked about or heard about on the show until now.
I know, really, really such an incredible story, and you guys will definitely have to check it out. And please also check out the work of the other Indigenous designers Amber Dawn mentioned, such as Bethany Yellowtail and Jessica Metcalf's boutique Beyond Buckskin. It is so important to buy Indigenous made products versus, of course, you know, that common trap of Indigenous quote unquote inspired, aka appropriated goods. And I also wanted to share some of my favorite Indigenous designers and brands that include Amy Young of Rinda Tribe, as well as the only Native American-owned denim line, GNU, and that's, of course, founded by the incredible husband and wife duo, Eric and Amanda.
That does it for us today, dress listeners. May you consider the legacy and the future of Indigenous design in your closet next time you get dressed.
Please join us this Tuesday for our full-length episode, and we love hearing from you, so please write to us with your fashion history mysteries or Fashion History Now news at dressed@iheartmedia.com. Be sure and follow along on Instagram at @dress_podcast, and you can follow us on Facebook at @dresspodcast without the underscore.
Last but not least, thank you to our producers, Holly Fry, Casey Pegram, and everyone else at iHeartMedia that makes the show possible each week. Catch you soon. Dress, the History of Fashion, is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your favorite shows.